Justice White, and thank you, Justice Blackmun. We'll hear arguments first this morning in Mills against Blutzel. Mr. Mankins, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. The suit today is to determine whether the state of Texas can prohibit illegitimate children over the age of 1 year from seeking a determination of paternity and obtaining child support from their natural fathers. This prohibition is found in Section 13.01 of the Texas Family Code, which is a 1 year statute of limitations. Stated simply, a suit to establish the parent-child relationship cannot be filed after the child turns 1 year old if the child is illegitimate. Now, what Texas has done is to establish two limitations periods, one of 1 year for illegitimate children and one of 18 years for legitimate children. There is no limitation at all for legitimate children or children born during a marriage. They can file for child support under Texas law at any time until they turn 18. Now, it is important to note and keep in mind that this is 1301 is the only limitation period that applies for any interest that a child may have in the state of Texas for any other kind of lawsuit. All other limitations involving an interest in children are told either by statute in Texas or by case law in Texas. Only 1301 applies to an interest that a child might have. This suit was originally filed by the natural mother of the child, Lois Mae Mills, and the Department of Human Resources against the appellee. At the time the suit was filed, Archie Burton Duncan, the illegitimate child who is the subject of the suit, was approximately 20 months old. The trial court dismissed the case, citing 1301 on the at that time respondent's motion. The Corpus Christi Court of Civil Appeals affirmed and did note that the 14th Amendment allegations of the petitioner at the Court of Civil Appeals was meritless. The Texas Supreme Court refused writ of error and refused to hear the case on a motion for rehearing.
Counsel, I noticed in the very short opinion of the Texas Court of Civil Appeals on page 16 of the appendix, beginning there, that there is simply about one sentence is devoted to the constitutional provision. They simply say, by points of error, such and such, TDHR asserts that Section 13.01 of the Family Code is unconstitutional, or in the alternative, that is told by reason of infancy. We have addressed these issues and found them to be meritless in the Hernandez case above mentioned, and based on the reasoning set forth in Hernandez, we overrule points of error 1 through 3. They don't specify whether it's the Texas Constitution or the United States Constitution.
The only thing, you'd have to look to Hernandez itself. I think we did quote some of Hernandez in our joint appendix. They don't really address it very much at all.
In Hernandez, they don't either, do they?
Okay. Only thing I can say is it was argued at some length, or was briefed and argued at some length in the Texas Court of Civil Appeals, and that's all the court chose to say about it. Now, there has been one change, or a major change in this law since this suit was filed and since it was determined in Texas. The one-year statute of limitations has been changed now under 1301 to a four-year statute of limitations. This went into effect on September 1st of 1981. It doesn't affect this case in any way, first, because Texas has ruled that limitations are a substantial procedure, and that once a limitation is run, it becomes the vested right of the defendant to use it as a defense. And secondly, the child in this suit was over 4 years old on September 1st, 1981, so even if it could have been used, the child here could not have used the four-year statute of limitations.
And I gather the new statute has no tolling provision either.
There's no tolling provision. The only change in the new statute is they deleted the word one and added the word four.
Now, did you say that the tolling provisions are either by statute or decision? Those by statute, are they expressly write in the tolling provision, do they, for infancy?
Yes, it's Article 5535 of the Texas Revised Civil Statutes that toll all of the limitations found in Title 91 of the Texas laws. Title 91 has your 2-year statute of limitations for torts, your 4-year statute of limitations for written contracts, and all of your general land limitations. That's a 5, a 10, and even a 25-year statute. All of those are told under 5535. There are other limitations, such as found in workers' compensation cases and under Texas law, and municipalities can have limitations on suits against cities written into the municipal code. Those limitations have been told by common law. The Texas Supreme Court has ruled that, for instance, in workers' compensation cases where a minor has a workers' compensation claim, that the 6-month limitation there is told by public because of past cases and by public policy. It's only 1301 which is not told.
Mr. Mankins, would it be your position that a longer statute of limitations than the 1 year might be valid?
Well, 1 year, if you look at what legitimate children can do, which is file at any time up until they are no longer minors, which is 18 in Texas. Texas has done this by making it 4 years now. But since there's no tolling provision, the difference between 4 years and 18 years, I still say all the arguments are still the same. Really feel that there's no real difference since we have a difference. Texas can, for children, can make any kind of limitation period they want. The problem is they've made one for legitimate children and another one for illegitimate children.
Can you think of any reason why they did that?
Well, the only reason we have is what the Texas courts have said, and this is the standard reasons that first-year law students learn, and also the standard reasons that's been cited in other states that have upheld these type of limitations for illegitimate children. That is prevention of stale and fraudulent claims. There are no other
reasons.
There's
no problem of proof of paternity
with respect
to a legitimate child, is there?
No, in Texas it is presumed that the legitimate child is the child of the father or the husband of the marriage.
And you don't think that that difference is enough to justify a statute of limitations of any kind?
I don't think it is, mainly because, first, the blood test evidence, which I think this court recognized the validity of which in Little v. Streeter, which decided in June of last year, plus the fact that you got the situation where, which has happened in Texas, where the under Texas law, a husband, a father of children born during a marriage can disclaim paternity at any time during a divorce proceeding and show through blood tests that he is not, in fact, the natural father of the children or the child of the marriage. Under Texas law, if the child is over 1 year old and now over 4 years old, that child is without a remedy to go against his true natural father and obtain child support.
Tell me, Mr. Mankins, those statutes that you said told during infancy, this by legislation, would that include proceedings brought by illegitimates?
Illegitimates on any other type of claim, yes, sir. If an illegitimate
in other words, the limitation without tolling is limited to a paternity suit.
Only in paternity suit situations.
In every other respect, there would be tolling in favor of
that's correct. If an illegitimate child was struck down by a car, the 2-year limitation for torts in Texas would not start running until that child turned 18.
Mr. Mankins, do I correctly understand that the Texas Supreme Court has now under consideration a case involving this very statute?
Yes, Your Honor. The Texas Supreme Court refused the writ in our case. Then the Fort Worth Court of Civil Appeals ruled that 1301 was, in fact, unconstitutional, citing the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. At that point, there was a conflict between two courts of civil appeal opinions, one in Fort Worth and our case in Corpus Christi. And the Texas Supreme Court did grant the writ based on that and did hear argument on this case in February of last year.
Hasn't decided it?
Has not decided opinion the last time I checked, which was about a week ago.
Are they waiting for this court, or should we wait for them?
Well, I personally don't know. Insiders have told me that they're waiting on this court. But whether that's correct or not, I have no idea.
What's the normal pattern in that court in terms of the time? Do they
normally
get
they
all
are
their
much
opinions
quicker
out before they rise?
They're determined generally much quicker than that. 90 days to 6 months, I have been told. I don't have extensive experience even in the U.S. or in the Texas Supreme Court. Much quicker. The cases I've had up there have been decided quicker than that.
You're not in the Fort Worth case?
No, Your Honor. Under a strange interpretation of the Texas Supreme Court's rules on taking conflicts, our case, even though the Fort Worth case was decided just shortly after our case was decided and before our case had gotten, we were already past the Court of Civil Appeals in Corpus Christi, but were not, had filed our writ in the Supreme Court of Texas. But we could not claim conflict under the Texas Supreme Court rules. The Fort Worth case conflicted with us, but our case does not conflict with theirs.
Can you tell me whether there was a challenge to the statute under the Texas Constitution in that case, or is it just a federal question, you know?
In the Fort Worth case?
Yeah.
I do not know. Only thing I do know, it was challenged. I do know it was challenged on the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment.
This case is styled in the Court of Civil Appeals in the matter of ABD, a minor child. And one gets the impression from reading it, being unfamiliar with Texas procedure anyway, as I am, that the Texas Department of Human Resources was the plaintiff.
Well, the Department of Human Resources, by both federal law and state law, they were supplying support. Archie Burton Duncan and his mother were receiving AFDC, $86 a month in the state of Texas. And when you receive AFDC, both by federal law and state law, which has been enacted, automatically any rights to child support are assigned by law to the state.
And the state must bring the action.
And the state must bring the action. Well, the mother could theoretically bring the action by herself, but generally in a AFDC case, it will be the state who will bring the action.
Well, and did you represent the Texas Department of Human Resources in the state proceeding?
Not in this proceeding. I worked for the Department of Human Resources in this area and filed numerous suits exactly like this. Then I switched jobs and went to work for Coastal Bend Legal Services and with an office in Sinton, and I was familiar with this case, and because the Texas Constitution prohibits anyone but the Texas Attorney General from representing the case on appeal, I took over the case on appeal for the Department of Human Resources.
Well, isn't there something of a parties problem there?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Well, if your client, Lois Mae Mills, wasn't a party before the Texas Court of Civil Appeals, can she then step in and be a party?
Well, she was a party at the Court of Civil Appeals.
Well, that's probably what I don't understand. She was a party as well.
She was a party. In fact, in the original petition, both her and the a child were named as parties. Under Texas law, these are confidential cases until there's a final decree, and at the request of either side, and I don't know who requested I believe it was the appellee here, this case was styled in the interest of ABD. Now, this case is the 16th case, I believe, that this court has heard involving the rights of illegitimate children since 1968. Now, this court has, in these cases, has basically determined that where a state attempts to restrict the rights of illegitimate children and where these rights are fundamental personal rights, then the state must show some, as this court has said, significant interest or significant relationship to be served. In other words, the rule seems to be, it's under the 14th Amendment, that we're going to look behind the words and look at the reality of the situation. The reason being that the state is seeking to restrict what is fundamental personal rights. Clearly, the determination of paternity, the establishment of paternity, and the obtaining of child support is such a fundamental personal right. Texas can discriminate against illegitimate children under the 14th Amendment, but in order to do so, it must have some awfully good reason for doing so. In other words, we're not going to let states simply use any reason that comes to mind. And in order to foster a classification or a disfavored class of illegitimate children. And clearly, a very short limitation time does not serve the purposes of children, illegitimate children, and in fact it hinders their obtaining child support and getting their paternity determined.
Did I get the impression from what you said earlier that any limitation short of 18 years would be unconstitutional?
No, I don't. I think, once again, Texas can establish any limitation it wants for obtaining child support. I think it could establish for legitimate and illegitimate children. It's the fact that we've got two of them here that's the problem.
That's what I'm talking about. Just this case for illegitimate children, do I understand you to say there can't be any statute of limitations short of age 18?
I think as long as it's legitimate children have that right till 18, I think illegitimate children should have that right. I think that's correct.
Well, Mr. Mankin, do you also have an argument that in any event, illegitimates are discriminated against only in paternity suits? I think you've already told
that,
me.
That is
that
our
in
position?
Every other kind of suit where a legitimate may benefit from tolling, a minor benefit from tolling, so also does an illegitimate.
That's correct.
It's only in this particular kind of proceeding that there's a discrimination against the illegitimate.
That's right.
So that it's more than just a discrimination as between legitimates and illegitimates, isn't it?
That's correct.
It's within the class of illegitimates. It's also a
that's
discrimination,
correct.
You contend.
That's correct. If having this limitation is important, and Department of Human Resources v. Chapman, which is the case that said this was a valid law for the reasons that we're going to prevent stale and fraudulent claims, if that was so important, an interest that the state needed to protect, the question, of course, is then why isn't it important in any other case? Why is preventing stale and fraudulent claims so important here when it's not important in a workers' comp case, when it's not important in an automobile wreck case, in effect, when it's not important if illegitimate has an interest in land?
Well, do you have a paternity issue in these other cases?
No, you don't.
Well, is that not the difference that Texas relies on?
The problem with that is that its paternity is probably paternity suits are probably better at withstanding time as far as evidence is concerned, the stale evidence argument for restricting these cases because of the availability of blood tests. Here, the blood test, that's very good evidence, and it lasts as long as you've got blood in your veins. And they can do these blood tests at any time.
Blood test is only a negative test, is it not?
Well, it is a negative test, but the exclusion rates are so high, routinely 98% to 99%. Also, according to Dr. Terazaki, who's a pioneer in this, that now 100% exclusion rates are now possible. They are expensive, but they are possible. With that kind of evidence, the evidence itself in the case doesn't become stale. Plus, in paternity cases, generally, blood test evidence is the only real objective evidence you ever had. The question is, did the alleged father have sexual relations with the natural mother 9 months before the birth of the child? And then, is he the father of the child? Whether or not he had sexual relations with the natural mother is something only the natural mother and the father are going to know anyway. So you don't have any, as a general rule, you don't have any other witnesses whose memories are going to fade. Who are going to get lost, and you're not going to be losing any sort of documentary evidence. If anybody is harmed by the passage of time, it would be the natural mother and the child themselves, but clearly they have the burden of proof, and if there's going to be any evidence that's lost, it's going to be their evidence.
Would you agree that the state could rationally require the plaintiff in this case to have a heavier burden of proof than the plaintiff in a case establishing paternity by a legitimate parent? In other words, in the legitimate case, presumably you could say that all he has to do is prove that the person who was married to his mother is that the male was married to his mother, and that would be sufficient to establish paternity. But in this case, could the state rationally say that in addition to proving that the two parties were living together at the time of birth or prior to the birth, that they had certain other things that had to be proved? Would that be constitutional?
I would say that it would not be. Clearly, it makes a better situation because it's going to be easier to prove. But once again, what interest would that serve in having a higher burden of proof in an illegitimate case as proving paternity as opposed to a case where the father of illegitimate child is trying to disprove paternity? Seems to me
the
proof
is the answer to that might be that common experience teaches us there's a greater probability of accuracy in one situation than the other.
Well, if that could be shown, I'm not sure that
there are more false claims in the illegitimacy area than there are in the legitimacy.
Well, the problem with that is that I've have simply never seen. Everybody talks about these fraudulent claims as the attempt for blackmail, but with the type of testing procedures we have in blood tests, with the other protections that the alleged father has, the actuality of fraudulent claims is virtually non-existent. It really doesn't ever happen. Certainly, men deny, and the appellee here is denying he's the father. But
it
surely
doesn't happen in Texas anyway.
That would be where my experience is. Clearly, now it may be happening somewhere else, but it is not happening as a rule in Texas. Once again, that's the problem I have with that kind of rule. It puts an extra burden on illegitimates, which, if it could be shown that there was a greater a possibility or a greater potential for these kind of fraudulent cases, sure, they then could require an extra burden because then the restriction on fraudulent cases would make some rational sense. But I haven't personally seen it. There's nothing in the case law that indicates this is the situation, and the type of evidence, once again, with blood test and the protections that the alleged father has in these cases, I think prevents that from happening, certainly in Texas. In Texas, the venue is in the father's hometown or home county if he wants it. The suit is confidential. Under Texas law, if the mother is excluded, or mother and a natural child take blood test and the father is excluded, the suit is automatically dismissed on motion. The mother and the child do not have the right to go forward with evidence, even with an exclusion, and try to show that the man is the natural father. Also, if the mother and the natural child under Texas law refuse to take the blood test, the case is dismissed. Whereas if the alleged father refuses, then he can be held in contempt, but that's all.
Let me put the question a little differently. Would it be constitutional for the state of Texas to say that in cases like this there must be a blood test, but in cases involving legitimate children there's no need for a blood test?
Well, I think that is the law in Texas.
Well, that is, then there is some difference in the treatment of the
two
classes.
There is some difference, and we don't have any problem with that. I don't have any problem, and that is what 1302A does require. It does require blood tests. The court, it is in mandatory language, shall appoint blood test expert to make these tests. And I don't see any problem with that at all. The problem we have is if you have all of those, if the state recognizes the validity of blood tests, recognizes their accuracy, recognizes the fact that if the alleged father is excluded, the case is dismissed right there, no trial. If they recognize all of that, then why have a one-year statute of limitations? Clearly, meritorious suits are being dismissed that could otherwise be proved up.
Did you say that if the putative father refuses to take the blood test, there's a sanction of contempt?
Contempt, $500 and 6 months in jail.
Well, may there also be a finding of paternity against him?
No. Texas, 1301, in fact, there is some disagreement on this in Texas, but under some of the trial court rulings, there's no appellate ruling on this at all, the fact of the refusal can't even be used in evidence. The language is a little obscure under the family code, but it says something.
Well, what happens to the mother's paternity claim if the putative father refuses to submit?
She's got a real tough case.
She can't ever.
No, she can go forward with the lawsuit. She can go ahead, she and the child can go ahead and try the case. There just won't be blood test evidence. It'll be the standard kind of...
Well, I know, but if she does, she may prevail, and there may
she
be
may.
A judgment of paternity. Then.
She may.
Well, that's right. In addition to the sanction of contempt, then.
Right.
I see.
Right. But the opposite, if the mother of the child refused to take the blood test, case is dismissed. So, you know, that's going to put, and with the accuracy blood test, that's going to put a serious roadblock in Texas to fraudulent claims.
Incidentally, blood testing hasn't yet, if it ever can, evolved, the technology hasn't evolved to the point where it can be affirmative on the issue of it.
Well, once again, we're talking about medical terms, and it's a double negative. Dr. Terazaki says he can get 100% exclusion right now.
What does that mean?
Means that all possible non-fathers would be excluded.
Well, does that necessarily, does it follow then that this particular person is the father?
That's what I think. If all other potential non-fathers are excluded, you have 100% exclusion rate, that means you have 100% inclusion rate.
Well, if you look at our recent case, I think, out of Connecticut, you'll find that all it does is prove who
could not be the father. That's correct.
It's a negative test, which is only a fraction, although a large fraction of the total, but it's nothing like 100%, as you suggest.
Well,
That's an incorrect statement.
Well, Dr. Terazaki made that statement in one of his articles, which we've cited in the brief. I have never seen 100% exclusion rate. I've seen exclusion rates over 99.25, 44, something like that.
What do you mean you've seen them?
Had them in our cases where we have done blood tests and said that the alleged father was not excluded and that the probability of exclusion was that they've excluded 99.25 or 21% of all potential fathers.
That would still leave the defendant and some others.
It still would leave the defendant and some others, and of course that is for him to argue to the judge or the jury. Our position being that if we had that kind of evidence, of course, that he was having sexual relations and we have this, and this is the evidence.
Well, even in the doctor's article about the 100% exclusion rate, he didn't say that's true of all cases, just there was a particular case in which he could.
Well,
isn't that right?
No, I understood it as saying that they could test now for enough, in fact, genes on the DNA molecule that they could get 100% exclusion rate.
In all cases?
Well, that's the way I understood it, but he did not go into any details on this. It is not currently done in any cases.
Well, apart from that article, isn't the general understanding that the degree of reliability varies with the various factors
it
that are involved
vary,
in particular
it
kinds
does
of blood?
It does vary. Almost all of them are in the 90% rate with about 25% now, according to some of the experts we cited, over 98%. So one in four over 98%. The rest of them are probably over 92%.
Mr. Mangan, I back up a minute. The putative father does not take the blood test. Can the mother bring that up as evidence?
Once again, this is confusing in Texas law. We don't have an opinion from an appellate court in Texas as what this means. The Family Code says if he doesn't take the blood test, the fact that he didn't take the blood test, the evidence can only be introduced to show he's not excluded. Some of the trial courts rule that means it's like Fifth Amendment. You can't say that he didn't do it, but you can argue that no blood tests have been made and he's not excluded under blood test. Some trial courts have said that you can open up the whole thing, show that you tried to get him to take blood test and he refused.
So there is great protection on the father still.
I think there's abundant protection on the father.
Not too much?
Well, certainly with 1301, you're excluding cases that could otherwise be tried. And with no real reason, when you look at all the other protections given to the natural father.
Mr. Mankins, the reason for your paternity suit, I suppose, is to establish the base for support.
Right. That's correct.
Suppose the putative father, knowing the mother, tendered support for 18 months and then decided to quit. Is she out in the cold?
I think she would be under Texas law. There is no opinion again, in Texas on an estoppel argument. The only thing we have that's close to it is Department of Human Resources v. Hernandez, the companion case to this case decided by the Corpus Christi Court of Civil Appeals. They, in talking about tolling generally and about why this case should not be tolled, said that, well, if the case limitation runs against the mother but it doesn't run against the minor child, then we're defeating the policy of a limitation in paternity anyway, implying that estoppel, which would also defeat the policy of a limitation in paternity, would also not apply. But Texas, unlike other states, doesn't have any estoppel clause in their limitation period. Other states which have limitation periods on these type of cases have in the limitation itself the fact that if the father voluntarily supports the child, then the limitation starts running after he stops supporting. Texas doesn't have any of that, and we don't have an opinion as to whether Texas would have that if that was used as a defense for limitation.
Mr. Mankins, early in your argument you talked about the change in the law. Must we decide that the 1 year statute is unconstitutional, or the four, or both?
Well, of course, the four is simply not before the court. It's not in this case. I simply, as my personal opinion, think if the 1 year is unconstitutional.
Why isn't it in the case?
Well, because only the 1 year applies to us. Article 1, Section 16 of the Texas Constitution and the decisions by the Texas Supreme Court under that state that when a limitation runs, it becomes the vested defense of the defendant. It had run in this case.
Well, that may be so, but what if we agreed with you that, well, therefore, because of that rule, the one-year statute is here? Suppose we said it's unconstitutional.
Well, argument...
Well, then wouldn't you have to reach the four-year statute?
I think all
the
arguments that could
be
made for
are you barred by some other rule? And they would say, yes, you're barred by the four-year statute. Then
Texas,
they'd have to reach that, wouldn't we?
The Texas Supreme Court could very well make that determination.
Well, what do you mean, the Texas Supreme Court?
Well... they would have to read the opinion, and if it was narrowly written, only applying to 1 year. Certainly, I think if the 1 year is unconstitutional, the 4 year is unconstitutional because it's the same situation all over again. Why have limitation of 4 years when there's no other limitation involving the rights of children or illegitimate children in any other kind of lawsuit?
Isn't there another reason why the 4 year statute isn't before us? Statute of limitation is an affirmative defense. Did your opponent plead the 4 year statute of limitation as a defense in this case?
No, because it didn't. It wasn't the law.
So how
at that
can
time.
It be before us?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It is not before this court at this time. But my argument is that that even though it's not before the court, certainly if the 1 year is unconstitutional for all the same reasons, the 4 year is going to be unconstitutional. Why have a 4 year statute here when you don't have a limitation for anybody else? And of course, the evidence for 4 years is just as good 36 months later as it would be after 1 year.
On page 6 of your brief, you have the statement, blood tests as evidence virtually can prove or disprove paternity because the blood lasts forever. Now, that first half of that statement is clearly incorrect, isn't it?
It's incorrect in that...
It can only prove in 99% or whatever the good doctor said.
Well, it's incorrect in that, as you state, it does not affirmatively state who the father is, but it excludes so many people. That, coupled with the other evidence that you normally have in the type of lawsuit, makes a very strong case.
Blood tests can disprove paternity.
Blood tests can certainly disprove paternity.
Of course, your statement is that it virtually can prove.
Well, that is from a lawyer who's tried about 60 of these, and this type of evidence is overwhelming when you get it to a jury. And a judge, for that matter. They're going to look at this, and really, this is very strong evidence.
Of course, you can't make the state rely on the one-year statute.
I don't understand, Your Honor.
Well, you say the defendant has a vested interest in the one-year statute. And even if it's repealed, it can rely on it.
No. If it's repealed, then we would go back to the
common law. But if it's amended, like it has been.
He can't rely on it in this case, no.
What do you mean he can't?
Well, because the 1 year had already run when we filed the case under Texas law, and plus the child was over four when the 4 year went into effect.
I understand. My question is, why isn't the case moot? The 1 year statute is gone.
Well, it's not gone in Texas.
Why?
Because Texas court has not ruled that it's unconstitutional, other than in the Fort Worth Court of Civil Appeals.
Well, I know, but it's been repealed. I mean, the one has been changed to four.
But
why should we decide on 1 year?
Well, because all children born after September 1st, 1975, who are illegitimate and who were not 1 year old by September 1st, 1981, and who have not had a lawsuit to determine paternity, are still barred by 1301.
Why?
Because 1301 was the law that was in effect when they were born.
Yeah, but if the state didn't plead the 1 year statute, you wouldn't be barred by it.
But they did plead the 1 year statute.
Well, the defendant.
I know, but you can't. If the state got up and said, we waive the 1 year statute.
Well, the state can't waive it, though. The defendant, it's his vested right under the Texas Constitution. If we have a child that was born in 1977 and I go back to San Patricio County.
The defendant's vested right?
Defendant's vested right.
Well, that's what does he do?
He's the alleged father. And if we file a lawsuit in San Patricio County on a child born in 1977, the defendant today can plead the 1 year statute of limitations.
You don't have to make it hypothetical. The reason you're going to lose this case is because that 1 year statute. That's the only reason you can't prove paternity, isn't it?
That's correct.
I mean, we don't have to talk about hypothetical cases.
You can't.
I cannot go back.
And the 4 year statute can't be involved because you did file within less than 4 years, didn't you?
Well, the child was yes.
I mean, when you brought this proceeding, it was within 4 years.
That's
so the
4 year
statute can't be a bar to this proceeding.
That's correct.
The only thing at issue here is whether the 1 year statute prevents you from recovering.
That's correct.
Ms. Bonner?
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. The appellee in this case did indeed file a motion to dismiss as moot after the time the 4 year statute of limitation became effective on September the 1st, 1981, taking the position that a child born subsequent to September the 1st, 1977 in Texas could probably file the suit and Texas would give retroactive effect to the new statute, which became effective on September the 1st, 1981. That issue has not been decided by the Texas courts, which is the reason appellee filed a motion to dismiss as moot, seeking time for the Texas court to decide whether or not it was going to give retroactivity to the new 4 year statute.
Well, are you suggesting that the proper remedy would have been to bring a new suit a year ago before the 4 years had elapsed?
It's true. Why litigate the 1 year when you have the 4 year looming
before
you? Ms.
Bonner, you represent the putative father, right?
I do.
Have you waived that defense?
Not
you
at
are
all,
now
sir.
Contending that's an obstacle to your client having to pay support money, are you not?
Not at all, sir, because the
child... Well, then why don't you waive the defense?
The child in this case was born in February of 1977.
But he filed suit less than 4 years after he was born. If you waive, if the 1 year statute isn't an obstacle, why don't you just say, let's go to trial?
Well, I don't see that the FLE in this case was in a position to do that. Because by the time our legislature promulgated and formulated the new 4 year statute, this case had already been refused and in the Supreme Court of the United States.
See, yeah, but you haven't lost your right to waive the defense. You could say right now we'll waive the defense and go to trial.
Well,
case isn't moot as long as you maintain there's a limitations bar.
Fine. Well, what the appellee was attempting to do was give the Texas courts an opportunity to decide whether or not they would apply retroactivity to the new statute before we came up here, because it would appear to me, and I disagree with Mr. Mankin when he suggests that the Texas courts are not going to give retroactivity for this reason. There are several cases which refer to not giving retroactivity to the 1 year statute, which became effective in our state on September the 1st of 1975. The reason to me is clear. That was a substantive right which was granted by the Texas legislature for the first time as an avenue for establishing paternity. Now, appellant would have you believe that Article 1301 of our Texas Family Code is a support statute, and it is not. It is a paternity statute. Now, it is true that it is a predicate, an avenue for an illegitimate child to establish paternity, whereupon then it can establish support. It does many other things. It gives that illegitimate child an opportunity to declare itself an heir at law for purposes of an inheritance from an intestate biological father. It gives that illegitimate child an opportunity to qualify for Social Security benefits in the event of the death of the worker holding a Social Security account number. It likewise gives that illegitimate child an opportunity to establish paternity for the purpose of becoming entitled to workers' compensation, to life insurance policies, and those kinds of things. Now, this avenue in Texas was not available to an illegitimate child until September the 1st, 1975. It was this court's mandate in a support case entitled Gomez versus Paris. But it goes far beyond enabling an illegitimate child to enforce support. It does other things. Appellant takes the position a legitimate child in Texas can enforce support at any time until it attains the age of 18 years under our Texas law. So can the illegitimate child if it will take the step to prove paternity. If the illegitimate child takes that step and establishes paternity, then it, too, may enforce support until it attains the age of 18 years.
And now they can do it over a span of 4 years, establish
paternity. That is correct, establish paternity, which is a necessary prerequisite in illegitimacy. Otherwise, how do you enforce support? Do you enforce it against all of the men of the world? Or must you not establish this is the proper father, biological father, from whom I'm going to seek my support? Now, the Texas legislature did not limit the right of the child to bring this suit within the one-year period of time to establish this paternity. It obviously gave the Texas Department of Human Resources the right. It gave anyone who had an interest in that child the right to bring the suit, including the father. Now, on September the 1st, 1975, we had our first...
Who would the father sue in such litigation?
To establish paternity?
Yeah.
He may establish paternity voluntarily by going into...
But that
into
wouldn't
court.
Require a lawsuit, would it?
And he
could
but
do
he
it
may.
More than 1 year after the child was born, couldn't he?
Yes, he could waive that. Yes, that is correct. And incidentally, I want to touch on this, about the blood test. Now, I know nothing about the blood test. All I know is what I read from the opinions rendered by this court. But it's my understanding that a blood test does not show that you are the father. It simply shows that you are not the father. Now, at that point, you must proceed on other evidence. If the one-year statute is held to be unconstitutional by this court, then we revert to pre-1975 law, which is governed by Gomez versus Paris, and in the case of the state Texas Department of Human Resources versus Delhi, that court has held, and so far as I know or believe, this is the law, that a pre-1975 child has until 4 years past attaining the age of 18. So that a child in Texas, should this one-year statute of limitations be held unconstitutional, may wait until they're 21 years, 11 months old, and file the suit to establish paternity. Now, if that blood test does not show that the alleged father is not the father, then the case proceeds on other evidence.
How does that help the child here?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
It doesn't help the child involved in this case.
It wouldn't help any child because his right to support has
say that this child is bound with a one-year statute and therefore has no cause of action. Are you saying that that child 18 years from now say that it is?
Only,
same person?
Only if this court says that that one-year statute of limitations which governed this case is unconstitutional.
Oh, I see.
Mrs. Bonner. Yeah, just to clarify this a little more, if this court were to rule the one-year statute of limitations invalid, then the appellant would be able to proceed to establish paternity.
That is correct.
And then thereafter conceivably could seek support
if paternity
from the father if paternity is established.
Right.
And you are still asserting the one-year statute of limitations as a defense on behalf of your client.
I did. At the trial level of this case, yes. The trial of this case was never heard on the merits.
Mm-hmm.
Paternity
right.
wasn't even mentioned. The case was dismissed because it was barred by a statute of limitations. No trial on the merits was held,
right.
which is the reason I requested in the Texas court that the style be changed to In re ABD in lieu of the manner in which appeal was taken to the United States of America, because, and counsel pointed out the fact that these cases are confidential. I respectfully disagree with that. We have my client's name all over the pleadings in these cases, which are very public. There have been articles in our state concerning this very case, naming my client, against whom paternity has never been established. But walking further in the proof of these cases, where the blood test does not show that the father is not the child, what man has kept records for 21 years and 8 months which could possibly disprove that the mother of the putative child had access to him, or vice versa? It
would be unlikely to have a 21-year-old suing for support, isn't it?
That is correct. But if you had a 16-year-old, in one of the cases in which I'm presently involved,
but
we have a 3-year-old.
You were referring to the other consequences, rights of inheritance and so forth.
That is correct.
Which might be worth a great deal more than the support.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, are you saying in your earlier remarks that essentially this is not a support case, this is just another paternity case?
No, this,
and that the support is simply a collateral consequence of the results of the paternity case?
No, this is a support case. I'm suggesting that Article 1301, the statute being attacked, is not a support statute. It's a paternity statute. And our state legislature has said, fine, to illegitimate children, we will afford you an opportunity to establish paternity. Now, once you do that, you're entitled to support, inheritance, Social Security benefits, workers' compensation, and on, which was the point I was attempting to make. We take the position that the state legislature has the right to set a limit, a time limit, on the right of the illegitimate child or its mother or the TDHR or anyone else interested in the child to bring that. And obviously, you have more than 12 months anyway. You actually have 21 months. Under our statute, the suit to establish paternity may be filed before the child is born. Now, there's a provision that if that happens, then the blood test for the child should be made after the child is born. But a woman is going to know that she is enceinte long before the 9-month period of time has expired. So in addition to that 9 months, then she has the 1-year period additionally, because the statute, subject of this case, says that a suit to establish paternity must be brought within 1 year from the date of the birth of a child, otherwise it is barred.
But in any event, you do concede that the statute was the Texas legislature's response to Gomez against Perez.
I think I would have to say that is
true. To that extent, it's a support statute. To that extent, anyway.
I think that's true. But it does do other things. It does do other things. It provides an illegitimate child an avenue. And In attempting to look down the road as to what might happen, I would hate for our state to end up with a situation where we have discrimination among the class, that class being known as illegitimates. For example, from and after September 1, 1981, an illegitimate child has 4 years in which to file the suit. If this court holds that Texas did not have the right to set a 1-year statute of limitations in paternity matters, holds it unconstitutional, under the existing Texas law, that child will have until 4 years after it attains the age of 18. So you have one illegitimate child who has 4 years to bring the suit, and you have another illegitimate child who has until they're 22 years of age.
Well, Texas can enact another statute to take care of that, can't they?
I beg your pardon?
Texas could enact another statute that didn't take care of that problem.
And I, frankly, anticipated the question, why do you think the Texas legislature said 1 year at first and now it's saying four? And the only answer that I can give is that you know the thinking minds of the legislatures better than I, and we have all seen in our lifetimes that when a new act or a new law is effectuated or promulgated and enacted, they start off somewhat easily and then perhaps bear down. We see that more frequently, I think, in the tax field than we do in fields of like paternity.
Your Honor, you argued that the 4-year statute had run and that he would be barred if, for one reason or other, he went back. But if he has a pending case, which he surely has, under the 1-year statute, do you believe the 4-year statute has already run on him?
I do. Even if our Texas courts gave retroactive effect, which I believe they will, to the new law, the new 4-year statute, that it would cover children born from and after September 1, 1977, that this case would at that point be barred because of the birth of this child in February of 1977.
Even though the suit was brought within the 4 years.
Yes. That's just my opinion. That has...
Ms. Bonner, do you know anything about the Miller case? Is the situation challenged under the Texas Constitution as well as the United States Constitution?
Article 1 of the Texas Constitution is mentioned. However, the case was decided on discrimination under the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, but not because of illegitimate children. That decision stated that the paternity statute discriminated because it was a paternity suit and not a maternity. There was no provision for a maternity suit. And as a consequent result, it was unconstitutional under the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution.
Do you have any guess as to why the case is pending, undecided? Are they waiting for this case?
I would have to concur with my opposing counsel.
I suppose we could find out.
I'm sure that this court could.
Did you say that
was the judgment in the Fort Worth case based on the federal constitution?
Yes.
Only?
It mentioned the Texas Constitution, but not as it related to the discrimination because it was a paternity suit and not a maternity suit. That went off on the 14th Amendment.
Well, is there a great demand for maternity suits?
Not to my knowledge.
Pretty easy case to prove. I think your time has expired. Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Foremost.